This is another damn podcast about digital asset management. I'm Henrik de Gior. This is a webinar recording about damn onboarding and everything remotely connected on how to onboard digital asset management systems successfully in a company. Enjoy.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's webinar, Digital Asset Management Onboarding and Everything Remotely Connected, hosted by My Damn Services. Excellent topic. Timely. Even more so as we continue to accept the way most of us are now working remotely. We have an incredible ensemble of panelists today, and we'll introduce them in a moment. So, onboarding DAM users is an art, and one that companies need to adapt skillfully for attaining employee satisfaction and achieving greater productivity. The case is especially true for any digital asset management program striving their best in innovating new techniques and welcoming their users. But there is a marked difference in onboarding users in an office as compared to remote onboarding. The real challenge is to create a comfortable atmosphere from the get-go, being that the face-to-face interaction has been replaced with a computer screen and/or mobile. And with that, we should keep in mind that a skillful process is needed to integrate the new and the old. And today we'll discuss some of those best practices to hopefully help create a greater comfort zone. Remote onboarding is an important driving factor that determines success of working remotely. So let's discuss how DAM users are successfully being integrated in today's DAMs. So let's introduce our panelists. Ladies first, Abby Wiesenthal. Is that correct in the pronunciation?
That is absolutely correct, Frank.
Excellent. Just introduce yourself, Abby. Tell us a little bit about you.
Sure. So I'm Abby Wiesenthal, and I created the first knowledge management center of excellence at Warner Media following a 15-year career in the field of digital asset management, digital media, metadata, and how to update content supply chain workflows as new technology comes along and as new distribution services became available. And I guess that concludes my introduction.
Thanks, Abby. Thanks for being here. Spencer.
Hi, everybody. My name is Spencer Harris. I'm based out of Kansas City, Missouri. And the last few years, I've been a business analyst for various companies and have gone in as a consultant to companies implementing digital asset management solutions of various industries and sizes all over the United States, and continue to provide the consulting experience to people trying to build and maintain their systems.
Thank you, Spencer. Appreciate you being here. Matt, how you doing?
Good. My name is Matt Dean. I'm the digital asset and photography manager for the Atlanta Falcons, Atlanta United, and Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I've been with this wonderful group for a couple of years, and I mainly help out with the creative teams and all the creative assets. So all the imagery and photography, all the logos, all the videos, those type of assets are is what I manage in our DAM system on a day-to-day basis. So.
Excellent. Appreciate that, Matt. Thanks for being here. And last but not least, Henrik.
Thanks, Frank. Yeah, my name is Henrik de Gior. I'm the author of Another DAM blog, the host of Another DAM podcast, and the consultant behind Another DAM consultancy. I'm also one of the co-founders of My DAM Services. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Henrik. My name is Frank DiCarlo. I've been helping in-house marketing advertising agencies for over 25 years. The early 90s, I developed one of the first SaaS models in digital asset management. And I've been helping companies realize their potential and maximum utilization of DAM to improve operational efficiencies for quite some time. And I'm looking forward to today's panel discussion. Onboarding remote users is something that is becoming more and more important. So let's get right into it. We have some questions prepared, and the panelists are will be answering those. But as I mentioned earlier, any questions that you do have, because we'll be saving some time at the end, please click on the Q&A button and enter those questions. But let's get started. So what kind of roadblocks or setbacks, if any, that you've learned from with your remote onboarding transitions? I knew you guys would be excited about that first question.
I'm going to defer to Spencer and Matt on this one.
Abby with the pass.
Abby with the pass.
Yeah.
Well, if we're passing, we should pass to the Falcons, right?
Sure. So I'm going to say that we've been pretty lucky. I think the pandemic has really helped kind of force people to become remote. And so I think a lot of the early things, technical stuff and communicating through something like Teams or Zoom, getting into, you know, good internet connections, all that kind of stuff, all got kind of sorted out. And then once people are kind of comfortable on the Zoom, I've been just kind of helping, trying to create a trusting, structured atmosphere with them, one-to-one tutorials, you know, letting them, you know that it's okay to record one-to-one sessions because now they have their own personal video tutorials that they can have. That's one of the great things is that it's kind of customized to them now. They can record it, save it, and reference the help they need later. And that I'm also available through Teams or through Slack, so they can always drop in with questions for me to help. So I think it does actually have some advantages of I'm always there without actually always having to be physically there to help someone as well. So we've had a lot of good success remotely. They know I'm there. They know I'm trusting. I'm there to help them. And I'm just kind of a click or a chat away to be there. So.
Yeah. And in my experience working with, I was working with companies setting up systems that were dealing with their user base were in some instances global. You know, one client in particular was a major pharmaceutical company headquartered here in the US, but they partnered with ad agencies, around the world. And, you know, this essence of working remote, if you will, is not something new that it was just brought on by the pandemic. There were a lot of organizations that had been already starting to work and support remote access and remote users pre-pandemic. And even pre-pandemic, you know, to Matt's point, one of the core things was access due to people's internet connections and security. But some of the roadblocks that we, you know, that I noticed early on, even pre-pandemic, was users knowing where they could go when they had questions about the system. And also that, you know, users may have historically been used to just a file format or a file management, like your desktop view, or even some instances going directly onto a file server, and just kind of seeing things very linear, very hierarchical in folder, and to get them out of thinking that way and getting them to think of, you know, a DAM is in some ways almost as kind of like a private, you know, search database that they can start searching for things without having to worry about memorizing hierarchy and folder structure. Some people, I noticed it kind of caused a sense of panic is, well, if I don't have this folder structure, how do I know where to go find what I'm looking for? How do I know it exists? And so it's having those training resources available and always promoting back to your users on a regular basis that, hey, if you've got questions, you know, to Matt's point, sometimes people can be a point of contact for support. You don't want to be the only person that they can and should go to with questions, because then when you want to, you know, heaven forbid, take a vacation or something else, you know, the things stop. They need to know that there's other locations and other resources to go. And, you know, some of the companies that I saw that were doing that very well had small teams of people that were trained, and that was the term we used was train the trainer. So as the consultants and helping them get their systems implemented, we would come in and train this team of leaders and essentially experts that were then available. And so, you know, these experts spanned multiple departments and multiple teams. So The user, the end user may be part of team A, and they obviously, because they know a specialist in that team, they feel most comfortable going to that person asking for help. And so it was very successful when they had more than just one point of person contact, but then also resources that person could point to, whether it was like an internal wiki or if the company had produced training videos that lived in the dam. I even saw one dam, one company that their kind of primary catalog that they always promoted upon entry into the dam was just that it was the training videos. So anytime anybody came into the dam, one of the first things they were presented with was a library exclusive around training and resources of how to use the platform. And that way it was front and center and made it straight easy to people to know where to go if they ever had questions. And if they either didn't feel comfortable or couldn't get a hold of a person, they knew where they could go look.
I love the idea of train the trainer, and we use that extensively. So for instance, let's say you were a video editor, then what you were mostly concerned with was how to download content from the dam and maybe export it into Adobe Premiere or whatever editing system you're using, and then upload newly created assets back into the dam, and having an editor be the champion and the trainer for other editors is just absolutely perfect. Editors might have different workflows, different ways of doing their job, but that was invaluable, having somebody embedded in the team. And so even in a remote environment, those editors are still able to collaborate with each other on the use of the dam. And the same would go for the other users, whether they were in creative or promotions or marketing. Presumably, those people would have fed into the requirements for a dam, hopefully, before you installed one or selected one. And so I really always supported the idea of the train the trainer person. And that person, I think, becomes even more invaluable in a remote environment.
Great points. What I would add to what Matt, Spencer, and Abby said is I think it starts with awareness, right? Because when you're remote, how do you gain awareness of new system, whether it's your first dam, your next dam, or a new iteration of the dam where it's changed and you need to onboard them. Maybe there's a new login, maybe there's a new process for uploading or downloading or searching or whatever that might look like, depending on the changes that have occurred. Whether it's a brand new change, right? A brand new system, never been touched before. And you're trying to onboard people as far as, and those setbacks is if you have a lack of awareness and people aren't aware of who's it for, what's it for, why should I care about said system? And then back to the who of it is the instructions, right, for, and we'll cover that later, for the individual, not just for necessarily just the person who's going to search and download, but also potentially for the admin person, because you may have more than one, or the more than one uploader, right? Person uploading and tagging, right? Who may be very separated from the people who are actually eventually going to download the files. There's often what we've seen is the person tagging is not the person who's going to be downloading and using the files. So being aware of these different personas, these different avatars, these different types of users, and making sure there's instruction for each type of persona. If you don't have that, it is usually a setback. And it's like, well, this is just for searching and downloading. How do I upload something? How do I tag something in this new schema or this file format? Because you may have different schemas for different file formats sometimes. So making sure that you're thinking as a user, right, for user adoption and for onboarding, would be my recommendation. Thank you.
That's great.
Another thing that I think has facilitated in working in a remote environment, not just for DAM, but for other practices, is a lot of companies are moving both their processes, workflows, applications, and assets to the cloud. which means that you don't have to download and work with huge files on your native system in order to perform actions upon them. And so I think it's great. It's fortunate that cloud migration to the cloud became more widespread before the pandemic hit. And that has probably facilitated the ability of people to use DAM systems and perform actions on DAM assets, even prior to when remote working became really huge.
Yeah.
So just something else to think of. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Frank.
No, go ahead, Spencer.
I was just gonna say, you know, a lot of times when we focus about onboarding, we are focusing on our internal to the organization users, you know, employees of the company that have implemented the DAM. And in a lot of ways they are, you know, your number one client. And so your number two client that depending on your organization to also be thinking about is if you're an organization that has external or users outside of your organization, you're pairing or partnering with ad agencies or other creative firms that may need access to your content. And that is something that even post pandemic and, you know, maybe you're going back to the office, you know, your creative agencies where we should be long past the days of, you know, mailing hard drives over to agencies and other methods of delivery. My wife's been cleaning our house and she's found these round silver discs things that you supposedly put into some device of some sort that loads images. You know, and a lot of that technology is outdated and we just don't deliver it that way anymore. So, you know, post pandemic, even when we're back in the office and we're working with externals, we do need to keep in mind how we train and onboard that they may not always have a person to go and talk to per se, or as a regular point of contact when questions of the DAM. And without this going down too far of a tangent is that, you know, this plays a role into how you've strategized and laid out and set up the DAM itself for usability. You know, your system needs to be laid out in a way that is super intuitive and requires very minimal regular training to navigate. Users with enough experience today of social media platforms and their own computers, you know, a lot of people today are familiar with a lot of the icons and usage. It's just now a matter of I'm now in a box that is my own stuff. How do I kind of sort through it if I'm not necessarily going through a traditional folder hierarchy? And that is, I think, part of that onboarding is helping people think beyond traditional hierarchy and start thinking in terms of keywords, search terms. And on the flip side that, you know, when they're loading content in, it's a self-service to them to make sure that they are adding those details when they're adding new content to the system, so not only themselves but, you know, other users of the system can find what they're looking for.
There's a lot there for a question that got a slow start. Something that occurred to me as you guys were talking, you know, has anyone incorporated some fun in these roadblocks or you know, something like rewards or games? Have you made it something that people are, you know, a little more engaged with or enrolled with by just creating some fun around it?
Yeah. So I offered DAM awards, literally. And we had a beaver on it for obvious reasons as the mascot. We would award them monthly on the top uploader, the top, the most active user, obviously not just registered, but actually in the system. And you couldn't win more than 1 month at a time. So that it wouldn't be like, you know, the same person over and over and over again, including my, and I was not included for obvious reasons. But people would love that because they would rarely get awards, right? You know, aside from their own bonuses or things like that. So, when they were awarded this, they would be notified. All users of the system would be notified, to promote it. And back to the question from Andrea, you notify them by email, by Slack, by whatever means of communication you use within your organization, right? And enhance it by offering them a small token, right? You know, maybe a coffee cart or whatever along with it, you know, something that's within the budget of allowable. But, it, you know, literally just a PDF of a certificate saying, you know, DAM award winner of blah, blah, dates. And you make a listing of the people who've won. They literally added it to their signature line later on because they're like, I'm the DAM. I won a DAM award. And bragging like, rights. What's that? Yeah, exactly. It was like, what's that? So it does work to give actually positivity in the world since there's a little lack of it right now.
Yeah. And then those same people can actually use that certificate or that reward. If a company still does self-evaluations at the end of the year, they can put it in their self-evaluation and say, you know what? I created more new content than anybody this year. And
there you go.
So I'm a very big proponent of including stuff like that during review time.
You know, it's an interesting concept, Enrique, that they would even add it to their email signature line. So I would imagine what would naturally happen by doing something like that is, especially amongst internal communications, is that other users would see that. And when they themselves, you know, have a question or a challenge or something of that nature, they now have multiple people that they can, you know, feel confident of going to and asking that. When I implemented a DAM for an advertising agency in Columbus, we didn't really do any awards. And I'm kind of wishing, Enrique, I would have talked to you a long time ago because that was awesome. I love that idea. But what I did find is that there were a few key people that were some of those heavy users and early adopters to the DAM. And they would come up to me with excitement, you know, while we were around our coworkers and be like, hey, dude, I used the DAM today and it was awesome. And I'd be like, that's amazing. Like, what did you do? Or, you know, how did, and it was this public exchange of congratulations towards it. And other people started to notice it and hear it. And he became, you know, another DAM advocate within the agency that other people, especially on his side, he was more on the client side and with the account managers. And so, you know, the other account managers started going to him more than me, which I was totally fine with and in love with the fact that somebody other than me became an inside expert to be able to ask and to help promote the solution. So it, you know, going to the extent of awards, I love that idea. I think though, it is definitely seeking out and finding and praising your heavy users, in some sort of a public fashion. Because one, it re-encourages positive, you know, behavior, and, you know, we create a little bit of wanting to keep up with the Jones scenario at work that, other coworkers hopefully want to, you know, seek and have that level of praise. So.
Good stuff. Thank you. Henrik was touching upon, a little bit upon the what earlier. Well, why don't we spend a little time on the why? You know, what's the why behind this new remote workforce process?
I'll jump back in on this one. So I, over the years of consulting and implementing systems with, you know, coming as a third party consultant to a lot of companies, you know, there would be the occasional time of sitting with the C-suite, you know, executives, or they would pop in during some of the initial discovery of a project to listen in. And they, in a lot of ways, have a very different set of lenses in which they look at the deployment and maintenance of DAM systems than the end users do. The DAM users, I think one of the common metrics that both groups look for is efficiency. You know, the DAM users themselves want to be able to quickly and easily find their content, get their job done, meet their deadlines, go home with little to no stress, so on and so forth. But, you know, the other reasons that are more top level priority and concern to the C-suite are the financials impact of being able to be competitive and, you know, being able to have content be produced in an effective manner, and meeting, you know, budgetary constraints, and also security. And I think that's one of the things that I've noticed, especially since we've gone pandemic and a lot of users have probably started to notice this themselves, is that, you know, how often are people dropping files, revisions, changes into the chats, you know, Teams, Slack, whatever you use to message back and forth them, and how quickly does, you know, change orders and feedback get lost and versions get lost and hard to track down and find later. And not only that, but when you start dropping them into these third-party applications, there's a level of security of having projects that need to maintain a level of confidentiality to it being leaked out and accessed and maybe being seen by people that shouldn't see it just yet. So, you know, going through and maintaining to use a digital asset management system, you know, in pandemic times and even post-pandemic times, one of the biggest concerns is security and proper usage of content. There are more stories than I got fingers and toes to count here about, you know, companies misusing content and now having to settle millions of dollars in lawsuits because somebody took something that they weren't supposed to and they put it where it wasn't supposed to go. And, you know, when you have proper DAM practices and people following and using these services the right way, it mitigates that risk. And for the C-suite, that is one of the biggest concerns is risk.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go on.
No, I would just add the fact that many people aren't going back to the office, at least not full time. So a remote strategy makes a lot more sense for those who aren't working with physical objects. Because obviously, if you work in a factory or you work with R&D and you're physically moving things in as a team, that's one thing. But if you're a digital worker like we are, and everything you do is digital, the likelihood that you're going to go back to the office is low. Even if it's a hybrid, you know, sometimes on rare occasions for big meetings, that kind of thing. So it makes a lot more sense to have a remote strategy for training and onboarding your workforce, because some people are quite literally being, even for digital asset management, being hired day one and told you're never coming to the office. You'll be working from home or wherever you decide to work from for the duration of your tenure here, you know, whether it's months, years, decades, whatever.
So, as I've been scrolling through LinkedIn and I occasionally see job postings show up in my LinkedIn feed, how many of them put in parentheses full-time remote work? Like a lot of companies now are expanding their reach. And that is, I think, another opportunity we can say that using a remote approach is offering companies is it's now allowing them to reach well beyond their geographical boundaries for talent to come in and help. Yeah. And a lot of companies are even starting to reach across time zones because of the support and the extended work hours, if you will, that now get to happen, that while someone in Eastern Standard Time is, you know, gone home for the day, your Pacific Standard Time crew can keep working. Or if you're on the other side of the globe, while that whole office is asleep, the other office is up and running. And that DAM, again, is that central repository tracking versions, providing security, is especially crucial when you're working with people that are time zones and thousands of miles away or on the other side of the planet, to allow for that. And, you know, other kind of horror stories that I've seen firsthand is where when people would be working off of file servers rather than the DAM, and you'd have one department going in, spending hours and hours, days worth of work, making edits and changes. And the other team came in and wanted to sneak an adjustment in, saved their changes over the top of what had just been done, and they lost days worth of work. And we're talking huge financial setbacks.
Yeah.
So,
and that's
Just to add to the sport, you know, in the sports industry with United, they train in Marietta, the Falcons train in Fowery Branch. You know, they're about, you know, 50 miles from each other. I'm here. Our photography team is scattered. We have a freelance network all over the place. And it's because it's such a decentralized team, having things remote, having the training remote, having the images transmitted remotely, putting them on the DAM so people anywhere at any time can get them, it's just been a huge, huge advantage. And like you said, not relying on servers or slow servers or not having enough server space and dealing with those issues, it's really freed up a lot of time. And you can actually be in two places at once if you need to, because you're digital. So it's been extremely beneficial for us. taking that remote path and having things on the cloud for sure.
And that makes it, I think, even more critical that your legal slash rights metadata is either directly connected to the DAM or that the metadata is displayed in the DAM, because that helps to prevent unauthorized use of content. You might have licensed content where the avail windows go in and out, or you have geotag content where you can use it in the US but not the UK. And so remote work, I think, is going to bring to light either the need for some kind of a rights management system or a really good integration behind the scenes between your legal slash rights metadata and your content metadata. And that will help with your remote workers knowing whether they can use an asset, where they can use it, and when they can use it.
And that is part of the onboarding and training process, is helping users know that not only when they're looking for content, that they need to make sure they're taking that double check and looking for how and where and when they can use that content. And how does the DAM present that information to them so that they do know? Is it through some sort of integration? Is it through linking to attached documentation? But yeah, again, I've seen firsthand companies where those systems weren't in play and users took content they thought they could and sent stuff out the door, and then oops, and here comes the lawsuit, and we're talking, you know, millions of dollars worth. So yeah, that's part of the important thing of onboarding, is teaching them to know their rights.
Right. And then bringing it back to the CEOs, I mean, each C-suite has their own story. So for the chief marketing officer, you can say, hey, because we're remote, we can get content up faster. We can get it to market faster and get a sponsor on it faster. We're going to have stronger stories faster, right? We're going to do more faster because it's all digital. To your CFO, you're going to say, hey, we're going to save $250,000 a year in efficiency and productivity because we don't have things on 15 hard drives. We're not spending 10 hours a week per person with a company of 1,000 people looking for things. To your CEO, it's going to be a great implementation to make the company more efficient as a whole. For security, for legal, for your chief legal officer, it's the lawsuits. So there's a little bit of something for everyone in the entire C-suite of how DAMs really benefit the companies. And I think getting the C-suite on board, just knowing your audience and tailoring it to them is a really good approach.
That's an important why that you started to touch upon, Matt, which is, you know, why is it important for C-suites to see that the DAM is successful remotely? You know, what are some of those other whys having to do with the employers and the companies themselves?
Yep. And even with your CMO, obviously, they want to market what the wares of the company. And if you can do faster time to market, if you can reduce the amount of time that it takes to do creative because you're not looking for the version control, you know, challenges that Spencer was explaining, or, you know, where is it on, in said system or the other system? It's this, you have a single source of truth for all of your creative, whether it's iterative, and it's strategic or versus tactical systems. And it's all there. And the matter of onboarding a marketing team from past processes, which is may vary literally per individual, to a streamlined process, may speed up the process as well, internally speaking, to your marketing team as well.
One of the biggest ahas that Henrik and I get with My Damn Services is this realization that you can plug and play as needed remotely, right? You don't need to hire a full-time person necessarily with short-term projects or just to augment a workload for, you know, metadata, let's say, for any digital asset manager. You know, it's an interesting point that Spencer made. You know, a year ago, it almost seemed like employers were embarrassed by working or asking people to work remotely, right? And here we are a year later, and it's just become commonplace, and much of this isn't going to disappear. It's kind of like, not kind of, it's the way we're going to be working. And for most of us here, I think, you know, I've certainly been working at home for many years, so it wasn't anything new. But it's an interesting observation that the employers are embracing that and realizing the advantages in being able to have all sorts of talent from anywhere now help their DAM programs. Anybody else have anything to add as far as the importance for companies or C-suites regarding remote?
No, Frank, I really like that point, especially if you guys, if you're short staffed or, you know, you have just one person kind of running your DAM, you can reach out and have services to help you remotely with the keywording and tagging and, you know, other elements that you might need as well. So you can reach outside your own company. You don't have to build your own in-house DAM department. Because of the remote work, people can be anywhere in the world and help you out. I just think that's an awesome point.
Yeah, it's really about augmentation, right? Because you may have one digital asset manager or digital asset management professional like yourself, Matt, and then it's a matter of, well, am I going to tag all day? Because it may be, you know, 40 to 60% of your time easily if you wanted to do it all day yourself versus giving that structure to someone else and having them do it offline, off hours for the sake of argument or whenever you need it, you know, when you have a photo shoot or a game, to your point, things like that.
I'll take a couple of questions. There's a few have been rolling in. What types of materials are there to reference? What can people look for regarding our discussions today and helping in their remote onboarding?
Well, as it happens, putting on my knowledge management hat for a second, I've been working on an article. And obviously it doesn't pertain just to DAM users, but it's how knowledge management can help remote workers, and all the different ways that knowledge management plays into people being comfortable with using applications and systems and finding knowledge as a remote worker. And of course, that doesn't just apply to digital asset management. It applies to, I would think, almost every remote worker out there, a lot of whom are very knowledge and technology intensive. And so that's why I think good knowledge management practices are essential to make remote workers successful in both DAM environments and in other environments as well.
Yeah. So, you know, in today's world, our users have a reading attention span of about 160 characters before they don't want to read anymore. And so, you know, we're really at a point where people want things more visually interactive. And something that I worked with a DAM vendor actually a few years ago now to help them produce training videos on the basic functions of their DAM platform that they then turned around and made available to their DAM customers of the platform. And those customers would also turn around and reference that library for their own user base. So it was kind of that ripple down effect, if you will. And so the vendor themselves had produced videos, YouTube videos that lived on their website on how to use these core features and functionalities of their DAM. And then kind of the key point of contact, the DAM manager at that organization, you know, they had that as their own onboarding to the platform, but they would then turn around and basically create a link to all of those videos. And that was a document that was, you know, shared out and made available to their users. And I think that there's the sky's the limit here on kind of what can you do to create awareness. I know that's one of the other kind of questions is awareness of the system and driving user adoption. You know, we got kind of two parts is awareness and the content to drive that awareness. And, you know, one idea that I've had for a while, I've never implemented it, so I'm not quite sure exactly how effective it would work, but almost setting your users up on an email drip campaign. You know, if you're somebody who's gone to a website and subscribed as to a newsletter, create your own internal one that drips to your internal users that, you know, once a week, once every 2 weeks, I don't know, whatever works for the company, that, you know, hey, you know, welcome to welcome to the company if they're a new hire, or if they are, you know, if you've just deployed the DAM system. Not everybody's, you know, they probably heard the rumblings of a DAM, and if they've never worked one with before, it's in some instances kind of a foreign concept. So, you know, internal marketing, you know, email things that can present the usage and adoption. I've seen, I saw one company a handful of years ago. They made a historical video showing the pains of trying to find content or find a specific image without the use of a DAM. And this guy was going down into the deep, dark crevices of the archives in the corporate office to find thumb drives. And, you know, he found a thumb drive that was labeled what he was looking for, and he put it in, and it was a bunch of pictures from the holiday party. It was not even what he was looking for. And they use that video to speak to the pains that a lot of their users have historically experienced when trying to find content, as essentially kind of a hype video. And it says, you know, DAM system coming on this date, you know, and they rolled that video out internally amongst all their users as part of the initial introduction. And I've also seen companies where, you know, it's part of the ongoing, it's part of the initial onboard training for new employees altogether, that, you know, within the first week, you have kind of an initial training, sit down, walk through with that person. Well, the one thing I will say about that method is that usually when people are introduced to the DAM in their first week at a new employer, they don't have a lot of context onto when and why they would use the system. So while it is a great concept and initiative, it is something that definitely warrants a lot of follow-up, especially as the person starts getting their feet wet in their work and they can start connecting the dots between, you know, what you're showing them and how it can help them do their job. And I think that's one of the biggest things, is helping people understand how the DAM fits into their workflow, fits into their way of working. And I've been asked flat out by that, that question by DAM users before, is, so how am I supposed to use this to do my job? Like, where does this fit in me using it? And, you know, some instances, I don't know enough about that person's job to know how to answer that question. So what I found I had to do is I had to work regularly with the manager that oversaw that group of people to make sure that they were using it, they were in love with it, and that they were that advocate downline to their team to continue to use and adopt. And they became that person that could help answer that question better than I could, is, well, how am I supposed to use the DAM? Well, that's where you're going to go find this image for that campaign we're building right now. So that's part of the why is, or these methods that we're being asked about, is how do we do it? There's so many, and there's not just any one particular one. Think about it as almost an internal marketing campaign that you've got to put to your users to keep it front of mind.
Yeah. And that's great points, because you should definitely ask your DAM vendor if they have videos, you know, just like Spencer asked. If they don't, you can ask, hey, when will you have for this iteration that you're coming out with shortly and that we're going to roll out shortly, when are you going to have this? People like to consume content in different ways. Yes, people's attention span have been drastically reduced by today's standard. And it's a matter of, you know, supply them something to watch, something to read, and something to do, right? So if there's a little quiz, a little game you can play, and you have the resources to create that game, or your vendor is creating a little game to play, it's like, let's play upload an asset, or let's play search and download this file, just as an exercise. You win a prize, right? Whatever that might be. And understand, like, okay, some people may be the to Spencer's point, for the first time in the system. So how do they search and download, right? Versus how do they upload, right? And revisiting all the simple steps that the people have to do, but also keep in mind, and don't assume that people know how to do it, even though we do it all day long in said system, because we've been playing with too long. Most of your users have not, right? Or don't, or go in there once a month, once every 6 months, whatever that might look like. So they may forget, right? How do I upload something? I forgot. I was like, or how do I submit something into the queue for review, or whatever your process happens to be. So provide that information and get that as much information as you can from the vendor, and then simplify it as much as possible for potentially the personas that Spencer was saying. So a designer may have a different process than a photographer, and an executive who's just reviewing and approving things may have a completely different process as well. So understanding those different roles and responsibilities in the system, depending on how complex your system might be, and understanding that it will change. So make sure all those that information. I don't recommend PDFs because PDFs can't be updated after they're downloaded. So not having old information floating around is not helpful to anyone, especially if you iterate every 6 months to a year. But if you have a Confluence page, an intranet, wiki, some kind of page, internal page, or a page that's on the help section of your DAM, you know, that pulls up magical website X that says, hey, and may be supplied by the vendor or not, where you can have all that information saying, I need to be able to know how to, or remind me how to download, upload, tag, whatever, this process, or do this task in said DAM, because they're not going to live in the DAM, right? So just show them easily within a quick bite-sized 1 minute video or quick instructions with some screenshots if they don't have the bandwidth to download a video or stream a video, you know, because we can't assume people have great bandwidth wherever they're working all the time. You know, soon we may not wonder if they have power. So keep those things in mind and make it as easy as possible for the people who want to digest it and learn how to get onboarded to said system or understand how to. Thanks.
All right. I use Dropbox documents because it can be linked to certain things. And, you know, once you've been with a company for, I think, a couple of years, you start to see some trends that repeat themselves. So you get the frequently asked questions and you can put that together into a little document. I have it where they can just click, like, how do I do a search? They can click that. It's a basic explainer of what to do. And it's a little GIF of, you know, someone doing a search and their stuff comes up. And then if they want to go on, they can click that. And it's all sectioned out so they don't have to read everything or go in sequential order. They can just quickly reference it as well. So it can be a link. They can contact me. I can do a one-on-one. I think it's just giving them multiple ways and multiple options that's kind of tailored to them to help them find what they're looking for tends to be the best approach. You have to be adaptable with them as well, I think is kind of crucial in gaining that trust to drive that user adoption and keep them on it.
It's always fast, guys. That was a quick 45 minutes. I want to thank everybody for being here, especially our panelists. Thank you. You guys did an incredible job as always. Not surprising with your experience, professionalism, and who you are. And we want to thank the audience, of course, for being here and tuning in. We hope you found today's webinar to be informative. And we look forward to seeing you all again soon. Until then, thanks again for being here. Stay safe, healthy, and have a great day.